Good evening, everyone. This is Lindsay Kenny with ProEFTRadio.com. And tonight, our guest is a good friend of mine, the esteemed and now pretty much famous Nicholas Ortner. Say hi, Nick.
Hi, everybody.
Pretty much famous, you know. You're not quite
esteemed
at my...
Esteemed and famous. I don't think I've ever been called that. Thank you.
Well, in the EFT world, just about everybody knows you. But I want to tell people just a little bit about Nick, just in case there's somebody on the line that doesn't know you. Nick is the producer of the film The Tapping Solution, which is formerly known as Try It On Everything. And that's been about 3-4 years now, Nick. Is that how old that is?
Yeah, that's been out for about 3-4 years now.
And Nick's one of those people that has a curious mind, so he's always looking at things, exploring and experimenting. And, you know, a few years ago he came across EFT, and I'll let him tell you that story. But what's interesting about Nick is his connection with people and his ability to take what he's learned and then turn around and give that back to others. And so it started with the production of the movie of Try It On Everything Now, The Tapping Solution, that came from nothing because he was not a film producer, and I'll let him tell you the story, but he created something magnificent that has helped thousands of people virtually out of nothing, and now has gone and then went on from there to produce the Tapping World Summit, which I'm sure you guys have heard about. Another one is coming up this month on pain. And it's been attended by the last one in January, February, I believe it was, attended by over 300,000 people, an online event. I mean, that's just an enormous thing. And it was all for free. I mean, you could buy the downloadable or hard versions of the material later, but Nick offered everything for free, which is amazing. And then he's got a monthly membership program for people, the Insiders Club, where people can go in and access thousands and thousands of dollars of information for a small fee every month. I'm going to put the links for these things for you guys on my website so you can find them. But I just wanted you to know, I personally think Nick is one of the most extraordinary young people that I know. He's done so much with his life and with EFT, and most of it has been about giving back to others, meaning giving, putting out what he's taken in and making a difference in a really big way. So it really is my pleasure to introduce you tonight, Nick. So now let's have a formal hello from you.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me. That was a lovely introduction, and I'm, you know.
Humbled.
I am humbled. I mean, it's just, you know, when you get everything written down on paper, you're like, oh, wow,
that
sounds pretty good.
Well, I consider Nick a good friend, and we've known each other now about 3 years or so. We've done a lot of different things together, and he's always kind enough to have me on the summit. And I know what a good guy he is. I mean, genuinely a good person. And I don't think a lot of people, Nick, know you behind the scenes. They know you as the guy that pumps out an email every couple of days, you know, giving something away or announcing an event. But I want people to know a little bit about you personally on this call, and we'll talk about this upcoming Pain Summit as well. So would you kind of tell people how this all evolved? How did you get started in this?
Sure, and let me qualify this by saying I think the reason why it might be helpful to share the story is that people listening will take a lot away from their lives. You know, it's not that I'm so interesting per se, and that you want to hear talk about me for an hour, because I get bored with talking about other people. But if you always want to know, well, what how's this going to help me? You know, like,
yeah,
what am I going to learn from it? And I think my journey in the last couple of years has been pretty profound on a lot of levels, and there are a lot of insights that I can share, you know, with people on how to make your dreams come true, because that's really what's happened in the last couple of years for me. I mean, when I look at my life now, I mean, sometimes it's a little overwhelming with how well things are going and how I'm able to, you know, do work that I love, do it with people I love, have worked with amazing people like yourself, Lindsay, and my family. We can talk about that a bit, about how that's set up, and
yeah,
then share this powerful message with the world and make money at the same time, and, you know, give away a ton of free stuff and also be financially rewarded. And, you know, to everyone listening, that's what we're looking for. That's what we want. You know, I know all of us want to share this information with the world, and we're into EFT because we're passionate about it, either just to use with our friends or family or to do a practitioner. And the question is, how do we share this information? How do we share it in a more impactful way, in a bigger way, and how do we reward ourselves financially for it so we can continue to do it? And that's something that I've really focused on the last couple of years. I know you see it all the time, people who want to share a message, but they can't figure out how to do it financially, and so they end up doing it, or they just have the poor me, I'm a healer mentality, I should do everything for free. And again, the end result of that mentality is that they can't do it. You know, they have to go back to their regular work. So I forgot what your original question was.
Well, that was really good. I don't remember it either, but I wanted to say something about what you said, is that the free stuff, it's sometimes people get so used to getting free stuff, they seem irritated when we ask them to pay for something.
Sure.
I give away a ton of stuff on my website. I mean, a ton. I'd say 50% of that's on my website, probably 60% is free.
Yep.
It'd be more than that. I know you give away that. And then I charge for teleclasses and webinars and live workshops, and people say, well, if you're doing good for the world, aren't you giving it away? Well, you and I know the answer to that, but would you speak to that for a second, Nick?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think I've written before about sort of a little story, a scenario of looking at how this happens, because instead of talking about ourselves and where we are, because people go, well, you should be able to do it because you have money or this, that, and the other, let's talk about someone who wants to be a practitioner, right? Because there's a lot of people who want to work with people on EFT. And let's just say, you know, hypothetically, that they work at a bank. They're a bank teller, so they have a decent paying job that, they have insurance and it pays the mortgage and supports their kids, and they work as a bank teller. So they find EFT, they get excited about it, and they start working with some people on the side. And most people start working for free on the side, and that's totally great when you work with friends and family and, you know, start getting experience and pick up a couple other people you know. But then you get to that point where you say, gosh, I'm loving this work, and I want to go get some training, and that's going to cost some money, and I'm so much more fulfilled and happy than working as a bank teller. So the person gets a little training, and they start charging, and you know, but maybe they only charge $25 an hour because they think, you know, that's a little something, I can accept that, but I can't accept any more. And then they get to the point where they go, I wish I could do this full-time, and they look at their finances, and they sit down with their husband and wife, and husband and wife says, well, it's great that you love EFT, but we need your salary, and you can't stop working at the bank. So they look at it and they go, well, I guess I can't stop working at the bank. So now I have to go back to the bank, and eventually they drop off being a practitioner and, you know, lose all momentum.
Mm-hmm.
The alternative, someone who actually says, I love this, I'm going to make this work financially, and I deserve to be paid, to be rewarded for this work, and they charge $75, $100, $150 an hour, whatever the appropriate rate is for them, and they start picking up clients and gain momentum and cut back on their bank hours. The next thing you know, they have replaced the salary where they're getting at the bank with this new income where they're making a difference in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a tough choice along the way, but it's a dramatically important one on an individual level and then for the planet. You know, like, we have so many healers who are just unwilling to charge. We have so many good people who think, oh, I got to do this for the world. And that just leaves a lot of people working as bank tellers and in corporate environments and all these things because they can't support themselves. You know?
Right, and they wouldn't work at the bank for free.
Well,
you know, doctors do good for the world. They don't work for free. Oprah does great things for the world. She certainly doesn't work for free. She gets paid gazillions of dollars for that. And you wouldn't go to a hairdresser and say, could you do my hair for free because, you know, I don't think it's fair. You're helping people look better, and you shouldn't be paid for that. And it, because we get paid, it allows us to give away even more and to reach even more people. And I give away scholarships and do pro bono work, and you give away freebies all the time. And so I think that's not the majority of people that think that way, that think we should give everything away. It's a minority. But
yeah, it's a minority that think. I mean, I think most people recognize they're okay with, you know, things. People charging for stuff. I see it more with people who aren't charging enough for their work or valuing their work enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you and I clearly value our work, and that's why we do well financially, and we give to the world. I mean, first we put out into the world, and that's what the summit is. The summit is, you know, 100% content, all for free, and as you know, we deliver on the content.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know how hard we make our practitioners work.
Yes.
On getting it right. Like, we'll go back and forth on outlines and really think through the topics. And everyone puts in a lot of effort. It's not just an interview where people show up and say, you know, I've listened to other teleconferences where both parties just show up and there's no preparation and the call meanders all over the place. And, like, we work on it. And it's like, okay, what are we going to cover and how are we going to help people most? And it's not just an interview. It's a product. It's a well-thought-out. It's a seminar, really, is what it is.
Right.
So we put that out for free, and then people can choose to, you know, go deeper into it and to upgrade by owning the recordings, they can share it with other people to get the transcripts, to get some bonus workbook. And I think that is the perfect model. You know, put out enough information, put out plenty of information that if someone has no money, they can go through it all and get all the results. And if someone has the money, they can have sort of conveniences, you know, the conveniences of owning the CDs or having the MP3s or, you know, having a workbook to work from. So to me, that is the perfect model, and it's shown the last couple of years that it's done very well for us financially, and it's grown the business, and it's helped spread the message, and it's the participants are delighted.
Yeah, it is an amazing event, and I don't think there's anything else like it on the web. I mean, there may be, but not in our genre. This is a side story. I was talking to the founder of selfgrowth.com the other day, David Ricklin, and we were talking about promoting and growing your business and things like that. I had a nice little interview with him, and he said, well, I'll tell you, here's the way that you're guaranteed to succeed is to follow or mimic what somebody else has done that's successful. For instance, he said, this guy Nick Ortner, you know, have you watched him rise? Have you watched what's happened to him? I said, yeah, I kind of know the guy. And he said, that's a brilliant idea, the World Summit. What a great thing, to, you know, way to give to the planet, make a difference, and put money in your pocket. And, again, people often will say, you know, I get your emails all the time, and you're just trying to sell me something. Well, yeah, that would be nice. Pay for something so I can give you more. But, yeah, speak to tell us how you came up with the idea of the summit. Where did you get a model for that?
Well, you know, there have been similar models that have been running, you know, for when I first found it. They'd probably been running for a couple years online. They were more teleseminar series, right? That's what they were called, and they're still running. You see a lot of these teleseminar series. And a friend of mine by the name of Kevin Gianni, who's an old friend from high school, and we worked together in a lot of stuff, and he's actually made a name for himself on the web and in the health field in the last couple of years. We got together, and we did this first event called the Fountain of Youth World Summit. And this was just calls on different topics, on health-related topics. We actually had Carol Look on there. This is right when I was starting to make the movie. And what we did is, you know, I looked at the teleseminar model, and I listened to a lot of things, and I saw what was going on, and I basically picked out what I didn't like about it, you know. And the number one thing that I did not like about it is I wasn't happy with the content. And, you know, that's something, this is really important, because I see people duplicating the summit model, and I've even consulted with people, helping them out when they have an idea, and I tell them how to work it. And the number one mistake people make when they try to copy what we've done, which is amazing to copy what we've done in your space and something you're passionate about, is that they don't get the content right. You know, they think that it's all about the model, that it's all about how, you know, you just put stuff out for free and then people buy it. No, it's like you have to deliver value, and it has to be, I mean, like I said before, we are just intently focused on delivering value. I listen to all the interviews, and I say, if this isn't good, I mean, we've made people re-record stuff because we just say this isn't good, or we've dropped people because I just do not want to waste anybody's time. Because I've had my time wasted. You know, how many calls have you logged on to listen in, and you're just oh my God, they're not delivering something that I can take home with me. You know,
yeah.
I want some meat here. You know, I want some veggies here. I want something that I can eat. So, you know, we focused on that initially. And then I sort of played with the model. The teleseminar series are usually spread out over a couple months, which can be nice for people, but at the same time, you don't have that focused work, you know, and it's like people sign up and they forget about it, and it's all over the place. So I really like the intensity of the summit. It's an event. It happens over 10 days, you know, similar to a weekend workshop when you go for 3 days over the weekend, and people's lives are transformed because they're immersed. And one thing that I found in the last 3 years of the summit is that the people that get the most results, because we get their testimonials, hundreds of letters and pages of testimonials, they're the ones who just dive in. You know, someone who said, I learned about this and I listened to both calls every day for 10 days, my life is radically transformed. Because they're doing that immersion, you know, they're going deep into it, they're looking at all aspects of it, they're doing a lot of tapping. It's almost like attending a live event.
Mm-hmm.
So I just kind of put those things together about what I wanted and what I had experienced going to events and attending things, and picked the best out of them and focused on quality, and that's been the outcome of a really successful event.
And you've put the puzzle together right. You did it the right way, even from the very first one. It was done the right way. And I never thought about this before, comparing it to a live event, like you just said. But could you imagine what a live event would cost, how much time it would take, and how much it would cost for people to attend to get that information? It would be, you know, 4 or 5 days long, exhausting, by the way, and you wouldn't have anything to refer back to. You would be overwhelmed and taking notes and then trying to incorporate all of that. But the cost of travel and airfare, accommodations, food, and all of that would be, you know, thousands of dollars plus the cost of you putting it on. And I don't think you would have that the material. You wouldn't have a recording unless, of course, you videoed it. You as the participant would have to try to absorb all of that material at one time, and it would be overwhelming with the audios and the videos. People could go back and rewind, fast forward, you know, put it on hold and go have a sandwich and come back to it. It makes it so valuable that way.
Yep.
All right, so talking about getting the content right. So, but then I've always wondered about the technical part. I mean, I know you, the first one you had trouble because you had, 60,000 people or something on the first one, which was shocking. Was that about right?
I think it was about, at the end of it, we got registration up to 60,000 or so. You know, the start of it was about 40,000. It was interesting. It kept piling up all through the whole summit, just the word of mouth. It was phenomenal. And we crashed the servers, every year somehow, usually on the first day. I mean, we work on it for months, and we talk to experts, and we have redundancies. And this last year, we almost had it down. We had the most people ever, and we had so much server space, so many backups, and we missed this tiny little thing. The player that was playing the audios was coming from another site. We just didn't put two and two together, and we crashed their site.
Oh.
So it was like we crashed Audio Acrobat, which is an enormous site, and they called us up, and they said, "How on earth are you crashing?" Like, this isn't, we're not supposed to crash, you know, like we're set up to handle this. And we said, well, you're not set up to handle this many people at once. I think this year we'll have it down. Another lesson on all this stuff, look, things are going to happen, and, you know, you just do your best with them. I had to laugh this year because I said, oh, my God, on the first night, you know, it's a little stressful when everyone comes, and once again we crash it. I'm hoping that this year we don't, but maybe we'll get a million people sign up and have another problem, and we'll crash it again, and we'll be happy about that.
Yeah, it's a good kind of crash because you have so many people, and people say, "Oh, we had so much traffic, our website crashed." Well, yay, that's great.
Exactly.
You know, it's a free event, so people, and you always make arrangements so that people don't miss.
Yeah, we replay
it again
stuff.
And
that
sort of thing. And the structure. It's, but to those that are new, explain how the structure works. Do the two calls a day and so forth.
Yeah. The main Tapping Well Summit that runs once a year has two calls per day for 10 days on a whole variety of different topics, and they run for free for 24 hours. So for people in England and Europe and Australia, they can listen when the time is best for them. And then the next day, the next two come on and so forth over the 10-day period. And if people want to own the recordings, they can choose to buy them.
Okay, good. Now let's go back to something else. In the beginning, you learned about EFT and you got really passionate about it, right? What brought you to EFT? Do you want to share that?
Yeah, I mean, I think like most things these days, we're just clicking online and finding. And I've always been searching in this material, and whether it be, you know, I went to Tony Robbins seminars when I was really young and got into just a personal development path and kept running into this weird tapping thing. So eventually, you know, you ignore it enough times. Eventually I tried it, and for, you know, physical aches and pains, it would just blow me away. You know, when you wake up with a sore neck and from sleeping wrong, it's gone. And then for limiting beliefs, I used it a lot on, you know, beliefs about money and stress about money and beliefs about what was possible for myself. And then with friends and family members, you know, it kind of became a joke that, you know, don't tell Nick what's wrong with you because he'll just tap on it. You know? I was with a friend of mine the other day who is a, you know, very well-known person, New York Times bestselling author, and we were going on a hike up in Woodstock, and, you know, we're going up a mountain, and she just happened to mention that she was scared of heights. And as soon as she said it, you know, she was okay going up the mountain, but there was this tower that she would never climb up. And as soon as she said, "Yeah, I won't go up that tower because I'm scared of the heights," she looked at me and said, "Oh, no." And she instantly knew that she was in trouble. And I said, "Look, I have no choice. This is my, you know.
I can't help myself.
I can't help it. We have to tap on this." Sure enough, we tapped on it. She went right up to the top of the tower, and her I mean, as you know, it's so easy sometimes it's kind of laughable. Her fear height is gone, you know.
Yeah.
She keeps telling me, I went to this, I was on the 80th floor of this place, and I was fine. I just can't believe it.
I know. It's funny. I have, interestingly, my best friends that I've known for the longest period of time are the ones that are most skeptical.
Yeah.
And so a lot of them have problems. We were sitting around together at a little reunion I had in Phoenix a few months ago, and they were all doing their woes about relationships and weight and a phobia, and one with stuck issues, a problem of some kind. And they just, then I said, you guys know what I do for a living. I can make you, I know somebody who can give you a good deal on this. And they laugh, oh, Lindsay, you want to just tap to, and they make fun and they do their hands on. I said, well, and then somebody at the table that I'd already worked with and I couldn't share that with them spoke up and said, okay, I have to come clean. I worked with Lindsay and on my fear of flying and got over it in no time, and it was absolutely amazing. And they said, really? And so with her testimony, then I got several calls from these close friends and started working on them, and I think I've pretty much worked around the table now on all of them, and they're just kind of blown away. And I said, well, you guys, I've been doing this 10 years. It's not like you didn't know, but people underestimate it because it seems so simple.
They do, and you know what? I'm in the same place. I've got friends. It's so funny. Same kind of thing, and they have problems, and I'm like, you know, a guy friend of mine who's just had terrible shoulder pains all the time, and he goes to the chiropractor, and he goes to massage, and he complains about it. And it's like, and I just look at him, and I say, look, you don't believe me, but you saw the movie. You saw The Tapping Solution, where John, who has 30 years of chronic back pain, 30 years, multiple surgeries, it wakes up pain-free on the second morning. Like, how can you see this and not do something about it? But people are stuck in their sort of paradigm, their own way of thinking, and, I mean, as you know, a lot of times they're reversed, and they have other reasons. They want to complain about it, and they don't want to get over the issue, but it is amusing when it's your friends and family members. You're like, I could help you. Just like it's amusing when it's ourselves, and, you know, I was writing about this the other day, that, I mean, when I spend half a morning with a sore neck because I slept wrong, and then all of a sudden it's 11 o'clock, and I go, why haven't I tapped on this yet? You know?
Yeah, one of my students wrote an article called, oh, I could have had a tap.
Yeah.
Like, I could have had a V8, and it's me too. Do the same thing, Nick. Or Jack will say to me, my husband, why don't you tap on it? Oh, yeah, I forgot. You know?
And people say, well, that's what you do. How could you forget? And, you know, that's what we've been doing for, I mean, I found this 8 years ago. You've been doing it longer. But still, that's a blip in time for, you know, it wasn't our formative years. We didn't learn about this when we were 6 years old, when, you know, these habits become ingrained. And so it's a new paradigm for all of us.
Yeah, my dream is for it's kind of a common, kind of a cliche, take an aspirin and call me in the morning and when you're sick for a doctor. And so my dream is that somebody will say, well, did you go see a specialist about this? Did you tap on it? Have you taken an aspirin? You know, so it's just part of the natural go-to sort of a thing.
Absolutely.
Okay, so now enough raving about it. Yes, people that are on the line know about that. Let's go back to your getting started, because this has always fascinated me. I know that you had to borrow money. You weren't film producers. So two things, Nick. Speak to us about how you incorporate your family into the business, but also about how you didn't know anything and sort of borrowing money to buy film camera equipment and things to make the movie. And then how you got the free employees of your, at least initially, from your family. So talk to us about that a little.
Sure, absolutely. And, you know, I think the interesting lesson here in the psychology that I took, the approach that I took through this journey, that when I talk to a lot of people who want to put a project together, they take a different approach, and I can see very easily why they get massively stuck and nothing happens. And basically, the first, I had the inspiration. You know, I had the idea to make this movie. Where did the idea come from? I don't know. I was not a filmmaker. I was in real estate then. I was buying and selling property, buying, fixing up and selling it. I hated it. Nothing fulfilling about it. I spent more time studying all this material, so I was in the space, but not as a profession, you know. But I had this inspiration. I knew the FT community was out there, and they were passionate. I knew how much I loved the topic. And I said, why isn't there a movie about this? You know, why isn't there something that actually documents what's going on? Because it's so powerful. Let's see it visually. And just on that inspiration, I decided to you know, buy $40,000 worth of camera equipment, enlist my younger sister at the time, who was just wasn't working. She had dropped out of college because college wasn't for her, and she was too passionate about other things, and she was trying to figure out what to do. So she jumped on board. My best friend, Nick Polizzi, who, again, we were working together in real estate at the time, and he was looking to get out of it too. My thinking with him was, well, he went to graphic design school for college, so he's kind of creative. Maybe he can do the camera stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And it literally was that basic. And, you know, I've always sort of moved on all these projects. You know, you have to have the big idea and the inspiration to drive you forward, and then you have to take the next step and do the next thing. And that's where people get stuck, you know. When I've spoken to people, I remember I was speaking at a seminar and sort of coaching people through the different projects that they were working on, and one lady came up and said, you know, I want to put out a DVD on X, I forget what it was, and my question for you is, how did you get the DVDs made? Because I'm worried that I don't have any idea of how to get the DVDs made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I said, okay, so is the product done? You're ready to make the DVDs now? No. Okay, so where are you in the process? Oh, I just had the idea.
Yeah,
you know?
they want to solve the whole thing up.
They want to solve the whole thing, and they jump to step number 82 in the process and get overwhelmed by step 82. I don't know how to make DVDs. It's very simple. Google how to make DVDs.
That's right.
You know, I mean, Google and other search engines make our lives so much easier. They make all our dreams come true in terms of finding out what to do next. You do not have to have the skill set and the experience to do these kind of things. You just take the next step. So I said, you got to ignore that right now, and you say, what is step one? You know, well, maybe step one was coming up with the idea. What is step two? Writing an outline about what you want to do. What is step three? You know, writing a little content, listing help, whatever it is, and you go in order. And the most that you do is you jump two steps up, three steps up on, oh, here's what's right on the horizon. But you certainly don't stress yourself out on, I don't know how to make a DVD, you know, when you just have the idea. And people do this all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they let it stop them.
Absolutely.
For one, that gives, it kind of keep, it's playing it safe. It's playing
yeah.
it, you know, they can't fail if they never get started. And so
yeah.
the reason for never getting started was, I don't know how to do it. And I want to interject a step in there, Nick, that you didn't mention. I know you had it. You know you did step, but it's not so much as a doing this thing as a being this thing. And that's having 100% commitment to the end result. So you knew you wanted to make a movie. You had no idea how to do it. You weren't a filmmaker. You had the inspiration and the commitment to do it. Is that correct?
Well, absolutely. And, you know, the commitment comes very quickly, sort of the no turning back when you buy $40,000 worth of camera equipment on credit cards and credit lines. This isn't money that I had lying around, you know.
Yeah,
so.
Well, I would say that the commitment became before that. You had to be pretty committed to hand over that credit card.
Absolutely. And a little fearless. And, you know, people were going to say, oh, my gosh, what a huge risk. And it was a big risk I took. But the psychology of it is so important, tapping on the limiting belief. My psychology was always, the worst case, this is a massive failure, I don't make any money, I file bankruptcy, and I move in with my parents. Now people go, oh my gosh, that's terrible. Like, I don't want to move in with my parents. I don't want to file bankruptcy. These things are all horrible. Sure, they're not fun, but it's also not fun to work at a job that you hate. It's also not fun to deliver your gifts to the world. And that is the worst case scenario if all goes terribly wrong and nothing happens. And guess what? That's not so bad. You know, you're still alive. You're still eating, you know. For all of us, food is not an issue, you know. Being able to get enough sustenance and being able to have a roof over our heads, these are not problems. And once we have those basic needs taken care of, which we all do, if you listen to this call, you have a telephone, which means you have a roof over your head, which means you have, you know, enough food to eat. We need to use that safety, which is massive and most of the world doesn't have, and then put our gifts out into the world.
Yeah. Well, I know that you made the movie, which was really I would call it a critical. The critics would be very successful from that point of view, and people watching it would go, wow. People that did watch it went, wow. And you donated a ton to charities, you know, for every so many that were made. Tell me what that – you had a formula or something that where you donated so many to non –
Yeah, right in the beginning, we were actually doing one-for-one. We changed away from one-for-one mostly because we couldn't find places to donate them to. You know, we were selling so many copies that we just couldn't keep up with that. But we've donated close to 10,000 copies, somewhere around there. I've lost track right now. We continue to every day. Basically, if a foundation, if, you know, if somebody of a jail, a school, a church asks us for some copies, more often than not, we'll say, here you go, and we'll ship them on our dime and get them out there.
All right. So from that point of view, it was very successful. You were giving back to the world. People were buying and watching the MIT videos and getting great reviews. But in the beginning, was it financially successful?
Well, it took about a year to break even, which is great, but it was still, I mean, a year to make it, a year break even, we're talking 2 years, you know, without making any money, and that was a challenge.
And you were in debt.
And I was in debt, absolutely, you know, $100,000 plus in credit card bills and credit lines and loans from family members, so, you know.
At that point, did you look at the debt and the credit cards and the movie wasn't selling as well as you wanted and say, oh, this isn't working, I'm going to give up?
And you know, never. I mean, people think, really? And, there must be something about my psychology that debt didn't bother me, you know? It really, I mean, I was in debt before, 5 years earlier from living in New York City, and then I found a way to pay it all off, and, you know.
Well, see, I think that goes back to your commitment. If you're really 100% committed to something, then you, and something isn't working, you just look for another way that's going to work, which is just what you did. And if you're grounded in the commitment, then little failures along the way, instead of failures, just become results that aren't working. And so you look, that's a Tony Robbins thing, so you just look for another way, which is what you did. So the film wasn't doing exactly what you wanted it to do, and then did anything particular happen, or did you just get the inspiration for the summit?
Yeah, I just got the inspiration for the summit. It was, okay, well, what else can we do to spread the word and to get the message out there? And, you know, we decided to do the summit, and we were absolutely blown away by the results. I mean, we thought it would do okay, but we nowhere near expected getting, you know, 60,000 people to sign up. I mean, I was going to be happy if we had 10,000 people signing up.
I remember one of your promotions said we could have up to 20,000 people on this thing. When you,
yeah.
I went, oh, come on, Nick,
yeah.
Because we were thinking in terms of teleclasses, which, you know, 200 would be good, 1,000 would be, you know, unbelievable. You're saying 10,000 and 20,000, and us in the community were going, oh, this guy is smoking something. Where do I get that? All right, so you blew the doors off, had 60,000, and then. I happen to know that you had, it wasn't all that easy to make the summit. You had some adversity, that huge stumbling blocks in the middle, and you may not want to be specific about what they were, but can you kind of allude to them and speak about that a little?
Sure. I think sometimes when you do things in a really big way and they're really successful, other people might get threatened by it or jealous or just have their own things come up. And we had, you know, personal conflicts where people were not happy with the way the summit was done and, you know, stated in a very public way, and it was very uncomfortable for me. You know, I had really positive and honest and just great intentions on the whole summit, so it kind of blew me away when other people were, you know, unhappy about it and talked about it publicly. And it just goes to another lesson on, you know, getting your dreams out there and your vision and standing out. When you stand out in the world, you are guaranteed to be criticized. I mean, guaranteed. Lock it in right now. Someone is going to criticize you. And if you have a problem with criticism, you're going to sabotage yourself and you're going to find ways to stay small.
Yeah.
So there's definitely some huge tappable issues, you know, and all the time. I mean, I nobody likes criticism, and sometimes I'll read something and still tap on it, but it's very different now, my resilience to criticism now as opposed to, 5 years ago. And it's these big events really force it on you. The other thing, too, that I've noticed, especially as we get out into the mainstream world more, is the criticism is even stronger there, you know, because there's, you know, with this weird tapping thing, there's some forces that aren't happy about it and that don't like the results we get. And there's modern medicine and some of those very, very Western scientific approaches that think that we're nuts and it's quackery and it's this, that, and the other. And, you know, I'm at the point where it's like, well, look, this works for my life. This works for everyone who tries it. So just kind of leave us alone. But you have to get ready for the criticism in whatever you do. It's going to come. And I almost see now as a badge of making it, you know. A friend of mine just had an article in the New York Times, and it was a big 5-page spread, and she was very happy when it was coming out. She had a great interview with a reporter, and then she wasn't that happy with the article. And the article was very mainstream, and she's not so mainstream, and there was some language in there that I thought was terrible. But everyone in the industry, everyone who was, you know, sort of made it from celebrities to big producers, called her up and congratulated on the article. That's fantastic. And, you know, she talked to a friend of hers who was that CEO of a company, and she said, but look, they said this, they said that. And he said, do you know how many times I've been made to look like an idiot in the Wall Street Journal?
Mm.
You know, like, they take quotes out of context all the time. So it was really interesting to see that it was kind of like a badge of honor. Like, everyone who had made it and who was out there publicly and doing big things were like, yeah, of course the media is going to, you know, make fun of you or do this or be negative. And they'll obviously be positive things. But, of course, you're going to get criticized for standing out and being different. That is just the way it is. So if you want to make it big, you just have to kind of take that as, you know, and look at people with love and compassion and know they're doing the best they can. And, you know, they just don't know any better.
That is a huge thing that comes up with my clients and in my classes, that people say, I'm afraid I'm going to be criticized. And my answer to them is, count on being criticized.
Yes,
you will be. So you can't deal with not have, you can't make the world not ever criticize you, and your fear of it makes you attract more of it. So I teach them how to be oblivious to it and build a shell around themselves and that sort of thing. But you're right, you are going to get that kind of thing, the weirdos, the people that are jealous, your competition, the media, whatever it is, the bigger you are, the more you're going to get, not percentage-wise, but just because, you know, if you drive 1,000,000 miles as opposed to 1,000 miles, you're much more likely to get a flat tire.
Absolutely.
It's the same sort of thing, so you just become oblivious to it. But in this day and age of the Internet and Twitter and Facebook and all of the other social media outlets, it's dangerous in another way, in that meaning that, like you said, when somebody goes out with a blog or something and criticizes you, you can't defend it. I mean, you can't make them take it back.
Sure.
And the thing that came out about you that was a blog was full of, you know, lies. And I don't want to get too much into it, but it was, I know how hurt you were, and we all felt like a sucker punch. We felt, those of it that know you and in the community, felt like it damaged us as well. It just sucked the breath out of my lungs, you know, hearing about it. And I was nauseous. And I know one person that read about it, a friend of ours, pulled over the side of the road and threw up. It was so disturbing to her. It was very upsetting. And I know it upset you, but you just kind of, again, I kind of keep going back to your inspiration or your commitment was you're doing it. This is just one of the things along the way. You did it in spite of really horrible adversity. And the lesson I want people to get from that is you don't let criticism stop you. You allow it to inspire you and continue to do what you know you want to do and what's right.
Well, and it serves as a great test to really check in. It's a gut check. Are you in alignment with what you're doing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, do any of these things that are being said to you about you hit home? Because if they do, then maybe this is valid criticism. Maybe that you need to look at it.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't hit home, you go, no, this is what I stand for. This is how I do things. This is what I'm committed to. I feel good about myself. I feel good about my intentions, and I'm going to continue, and I'm going to redouble my efforts to do it. So, I mean, that can be the positive side of criticism. That,
sure.
You know, if you check in and go, look, they can say whatever they want. I mean, that, you know, my friend, again, with that New York Times piece, she had two choices with it. She can let it hit her and go, well, I'm going to play small now. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's not safe. I can't be myself. I was myself with this reporter, and she took everything out of context, and I can't be me because me is dangerous.
Yeah,
you know?
That's right. That's a big thing. People say, I can't be generous or kind because people will take advantage of me, or I can't be myself. People will criticize me. And yeah, I think the benchmark that people have to come back to is being true to themselves, so the integrity of their own personal commitment and authenticity. And if they stay true to that, they're going to be fine.
Well, absolutely. And authenticity is such a huge thing. And I talk to a lot of people. You know, some people will call me up with some, I do some marketing consulting here and there and bits and pieces when I have some time, and to help people get their message out in the world. And the authenticity thing is so huge, because if you try to be someone else or if you try to make everybody happy, you're just not going to connect with people. Especially in this day and age, people want to connect with their tribe. So you be yourself fully and authentically, and people will just be magnetized to you. Wow, this person is like me, and they're speaking their truth, and they're saying all the things that I want to say, but I don't have the courage to. as opposed to trying to please everybody and saying, well, I'm gonna write something that's bland that makes everybody happy and nobody gets upset about it, or you know, it doesn't push anybody's buttons. So that authenticity piece is enormous, and I think it's one of the sort of major challenges of us going forward as a society. Is like, can we be authentic? Can we be ourselves? And can we allow others to be authentic and not feel threatened by it? And you know.
All right. So if someone asks you, and that someone's going to be me in a second, if someone asks you, then so Nick, what are the two most important factors that to attribute to your incredible rise to success in a matter of just, you know, 2 or 3 years? What would be two things that you would advise everybody to make sure they cover?
Well, one that we already talked about, the one step at a time. It's so big to just take the next step. And I've never been a big goal setter or planner, and you know, some people are into doing 5-year plans, and if you're into that, that's great, because that means it works for you. It doesn't work for me. I just kind of come up with an idea and then look at what's next. And you know, I plan out the next year, especially now as things are busier. We have to plan out what's happening 6 months from now and when the summits are going to run and you know what's going on. But just go one at a time. And then I think the other one, which we haven't talked too much about, is, I mean, I've got a thirst for knowledge and for information, and I constantly have, you know, headphones on listening to something. And that's so crucial, because getting that information in your head, and whether it's information or inspiration or, you know, whatever you feel like listening to, is just, it's enormous. And that's made a huge difference in completely transforming my mindset, you know, educating me more so I can share that message with other people. I mean, all we're doing, any educator from, you know, the highest level best-selling author to someone who just started coaching, we're distilling information from other people, other thoughts, and we're adding our own thoughts to it, our own twist, and our own life experience. So the more of that you sort of put in, the greater the output's going to be.
Okay, that's terrific. I want to turn to another direction and get more personal again. I want to talk about your family involvement, how you've gotten your brother and sister involved and the rest of your family. So would you speak to that a minute? Because your staff has grown from basically one to several people. So tell us about the size of your staff and how many of those you're related to.
Well, I think we're about 10 people now altogether, with customer service. And that's just the internal people. We work with so many outside contractors and people who do, you know, for our website people or outside contractors. So, you know, at any given time, we can have 15 to 20 people working on various projects. And about half of the 10 staff is my family. You know, I mentioned that Jessica got involved right from the start, and everyone knows her as the host of the Tapping World Summit and the Tapping Insiders Club. And it, again, the universe lined up perfectly, because it is her gift to interview people. It is her passion. She likes nothing more in the world than to interview people, and she's so good at it.
Mm-hmm.
And she improves every year, and she's fantastic at knowing. She always knows exactly what the listener is thinking, which I think is such a huge key for an interviewer. And she asks a question that, you know, sometimes an expert can go off topic or get too deep or not be clear on something. She's just so good at picking up, oh, this is what the person listening needs to hear, or we need to bring this back. So she's been a key part from the beginning, worked on the movie. And then we have my brother, Alex, my younger brother.
Just one second. I'm going to say something about Jessica. Besides being savvy and good at what she's doing, she also happens to be very sweet and very gorgeous. Doesn't hurt to have those two things.
It absolutely, yes. She's very charismatic and loving, and people really connect with that.
All right, now Alex.
Alex is my younger brother, Justin, now somebody younger, I'm the oldest, and he came on board after the movie was done. When we started doing more of the summits, he ran the second summit and then the third one, and he's sort of the behind-the-scenes guy. Poor guy doesn't get any credit, you know, for all the hard work that he does in making everything function, you know, and getting new affiliates on board to promote the summit and then establishing more relationship and just the nuts and bolts of getting everything to work and the sales copy on the upsells and just, you know, and he's amazing at it. And we have my father as well, who also doesn't get any credit, and he does a lot of the bookkeeping and company management and just sort of anything we need. He's just there, and he's amazing. I consider him the kindest man on the planet. I mean, he's just, he wouldn't squash a bug. and he's so loving. And then,
well, if I want to say something, that's Martin. You know him as Dad. We know him as Martin. But for a long time, I and several other people thought he was just your older brother, because he's a youthful looking guy, and we just thought he was just one more sibling. But you know, he's sort of the parent.
Dad. You know what's great is that Pat Carrington met him. We had our mastermind for the top 20 affiliates in New York City, and Pat was there, and my father was there, and they met, and they were together for a couple of days, and towards the end, Pat said, someone said something about Martin being my dad, and Pat said, what? And she had met him in person, so, you know, I mean, he looks older, but he does look youthful. She said, I thought you were the older brother.
Yeah.
You know? So it was very, very funny.
He must be very proud of his little family.
I think he is. Okay. I know he is.
All right. Now, there's one other member. I know you've got several others, but there's one particular I want you to introduce and make a pretty bold announcement about that, if you don't mind.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't want to lose too many people with all my details.
No, this is interesting. You're kidding. We want to know the guy behind the guy.
Very good. But the latest addition is my fiancée, Brenna.
Fiancée.
And we got engaged a couple weeks ago. And she works on the Insiders Club. She basically runs that whole club and puts our events together when we do events. And she's just amazing. And we love working together. So
how do you know Brenna, Nick?
Well, Brenna happens to be my younger sister's best friend from growing up. So we've known each other our whole lives and reconnected about a year and a half ago. And it was meant to be an instant connection. And we just knew, and we've had amazing, happy, happy times ever since. So I am beyond, as everyone can listen and can hear, I am beyond blessed. And,
yeah.
And in my life, and how fantastic it is. And you know, it doesn't mean I don't have challenges or stress, but a lot less than I used to. And you know, my new motto in all this is things are so good that I'm not allowing any stress into my life. You know, because as things grow, you get stresses of growth. People say, well, what do you tap on now that your business is successful? Well, there's conflicts with partners, or you know, getting things done, or something's not on time. But you know, I've sort of raised my standard of not allowing any stress into my life, because there's no reason to. You know, there's just, things are going way too, they're too good to allow me, you know, allow myself to be stressed at all.
Well, that's great. A lot of people fear that when they get successful that they're going to lose it. That becomes a focus, just like, well, what if I get criticized? Well, what if I get it and then I lose it? So they haven't even started it, and they're only worried about losing it, because that's happened to them before. People are going to be wondering, I think, as they're hearing you talk about working with your fiance and your sister and brother and father and your family and these other friends, about every business has conflict and discord, so you can't fire your brother or your sister. How do you guys resolve conflict, or do you have conflict amongst yourselves?
Oh, we do, and it's really rare. Every, you know, I feel like twice a year there'll be something, but we've gotten so much better. I mean, it's like anything else. It's open communication and people being honest with each other and sharing how they feel. Hey, I feel like I'm doing all the work on this, or I need more support on this, or you know, that open communication makes all the difference. The nice thing about working with families, and when you have such a good relationship with them, is that you can get annoyed at them, and no one, you know, it doesn't last long, and no one takes it to heart. You know, it's like, I can't believe you did this. You messed up this whole thing, but whatever. You know?
Yeah. If it's a friend, you can kind of break up with them. When it's family, and family you really love you and respect, you it's just a glitch. You have a huge emotional bank account built up with them, and it's just one little glitch in the rug.
And you keep working on it, and it's like any other relationship. You have to work on it, and you have to be authentic and honest, and you keep that through in your communications, throughout your communications. It's going to make all the difference.
Okay, good. All right, now, Nick, this summit that you're doing later this month in September is going to be, if I'm understanding, it's on pain. I'm blessed to be a part of that. And so people are going to get hit on all sides about pain, how to deal with it from different levels, all about tapping. And I think it's going to be great. I was very excited to do it. Pain is just so much part of our everyday lives. People just learn to live with it and don't even realize they had it. I've had this awful mercury fillings in my mouth for 20 or 30 years, and I didn't realize it was making me sick. And as it's coming out, the side of the mouth that the mercury is out of is pain-free, and I realize how painful my mouth is on the left side. I've been living with that discomfort for years and didn't even know it, besides how it's affected the rest of my body. And a lot of people just live with pain. So I think this is a really important summit. What made you decide to do it on pain?
Well, we had put out, I mean, I've always been blown away by how EFT works on pain. Just blown away, because I know you've had just as many experiences where you tap with someone for 10 minutes and their pain's gone. You know, or if it takes several sessions and they had pain that was around for 30 years and it's gone. It just blows me away. To me, it's the most concrete part of tapping, that someone can say, I had pain, now I don't. You know, a lot of times with limiting beliefs or that kind of work, it's harder to describe to other people, oh, well, I tapped on my fear of success and now I'm successful. People go, oh, okay, whatever that is. It's not as dramatic as I was in pain and now I'm not. The other thing that I think is really important about it is that it can reach so many people, and that's the idea behind the Pain Relief World Summit. I want to use pain as the doorway to all the other work. I mean, at the end of the day, you and I know that the work is consciousness work. It's emotional work. It's getting to the root of it. That's usually, you know, the main thing behind pain. Sometimes there's some physical stuff going on, but more often than not, too, when, you know, we hear, oh, I have this, you know, my doctor diagnosed me as this. Well, if you had this diagnosis that it can only be fixed by surgery, why is the pain gone and the body healed in 2 weeks, you know, or whatever it is that happened? So there's something else going on. And I always like to think of the fact that, you know, the body heals. If you break a bone, the body heals.
So why are you still having the pain?
So why are you still having the pain? And why is the slip disc not healing? Or why is the this, you know, whatever it is you were diagnosed with, not healing? So this event's going to run, I think, for 6 days, so it's a little shorter than the Tapping World Summit. And like you said, it's all focused on pain. We're looking at it from every angle. We have some topic-specific ones, so, you know, there'll be one on back pain and one on fibromyalgia, and then there's more general ones. And I encourage people to do two things. If you're in pain, obviously tune in, and then tune in for everything. You know, if you have knee pain, tune into the back pain call, because you're going to get insights from it. If you have neck pain, listen to fibromyalgia, because there's going to be some things that resonate for you that help you there. And then the other thing that I really ask people for, and this is sort of the intent behind the whole summit, is that after you sign up, and it's a free registration, just like the Tapping World Summit, you share it with friends and family members. Like, this is the opportunity to help them. And, you know, you have that cousin who never listens to you about the tapping thing. Well, they have back pain, and they're probably fed up with it. That's the other great and not great thing about pain, is that people who are in pain aren't pain, right?
Yeah.
So they want to have a solution for it. They're actively looking, and they'll try heating pads and pills and all this stuff, and they want the pain to stop. I mean, who wouldn't want the pain to stop? So hopefully that pain moves them to look at this, to do the tapping, and then the result is that not only are they going to get pain relief, but they're going to get relief in other parts of their lives. They're going to let go of that anger and the shame, like it'd be in your interview, and all the things they've been holding on for so long. So people who tune in, their lives are going to be transformed, not just from the physical level, but on all levels.
Yeah, because at some point they go, gee, does this work on whatever else? Stomach aches? Does this work on sadness or grief or stress? And that's how, you know, I try introducing it one little thing at a time. This is a technique to use for stress or feeling overwhelmed. Everybody goes, oh, man, I need that. And then once they get the result, they say, well, that was interesting. And then I go, well, you know, it also works on, and then list of a few of the other things. Oh, wow. And so it's a great way. As you said, pain is so tangible and so measurable. It's not a subjective thing. It is, how big is your pain now?
Yeah.
And my part in it is I'm doing the cone of shame. I want to change that because I realized that was the name of a cartoon, you know, thing. And I think the movie was Up, the animation, when a dog had one of those cones on their face.
Yeah.
You know? But it's about the shame and guilt and regret and remorse we have in our lives about things that we've done and how that manifests into pain. I hope you play that toward the beginning, because I think people are going to get that, how that weighs on us and can cause pain. But what you said about, don't just watch or listen to the ones that are relative to your specific pain, but transference over to something else is going to be really big. You're going to hear something on neck pain, if you've never had neck pain, that might help you with your foot pain or unhealed sore or something.
Absolutely. Well,
that's a good point. So the next thing is, and I like this idea about having a big summit at the beginning of the year, great way to get the year started, and then having this other specialty summit toward you know, fall and winter, and I'm hoping next year you'll do another one, you know, like on abundance or on procrastination or some other big issue.
Yeah, we could do abundance, we could do weight loss and,
and
body issues. That's a big deal for people. Maybe we'll do the weight loss world summit.
Yeah, I like that. I'm doing a weight course in Phoenix and next month, and it's just a big topic. You know, 67% of our population is overweight, so that is a big issue. We just have a few minutes left. Nick, I wanted you to tell me, you know, there's a lot of things you've got on your mind, and you know what kind of questions people ask you all the time. What is it people want to know, or what would you like us to know about, either about you or about what you do?
Well, I think, you know, you've heard bits and pieces today of the journey in the last couple of years, and it's been extraordinary, and it's been, again, I'm beyond blessed, and I think what people can take from it is that you can do the same thing, you know, and I used to hear that and think it's cheesy, but you can do the same thing and take it one step at a time. Go for what's right in front of you, and also know that it's going to take time. You know, what's interesting is that what's happened in the last couple of years has been extraordinary, phenomenal, and then when I was in the middle of it, it seemed like things were taking forever to happen. You know?
Yeah.
And that's usually the case. I mean, the whole overnight success thing is such a joke. It's just hysterical. You know, I mean, the only thing that happens overnight is you win the lottery. You know?
That's true. But it appears overnight because in the course of our lifetime, 2 or 3 years is almost overnight. It just doesn't seem like anything. I mean, you know, I remember you as a little snotty-nosed kid just a few years ago.
But people lose that there was 10 years before then of studying, researching,
right,
having other experiences, you
right,
know, having challenges. So, and yes, this has been fast and it's been, you know, fantastic, but it's, a lot of people will start a project and they'll put out a DVD or they'll put out a book and think, tomorrow I'm going to be a, you know, New York Times bestseller on an Oprah. And, you know, sometimes the universe delivers these amazing things for us, and other times it says, hey, you gotta put in your work and you got some lessons to learn here, and I'm not going to give this. I mean, I'm so grateful that, you know, the movie could have been on Oprah the day it was released, and I'm grateful it wasn't, because the journey has been incredible. It's made me a better speaker and researcher and studier of information. It's just made me stronger. And if I had been on Oprah that next day and all of a sudden had instant financial success, who knows where this would be. You know,
well, you wouldn't have, yeah, you might not have done the Tapping Summit.
I might have not done the summits because I said, oh, well, I've made enough money on this stuff. I'm not motivated to do other things or to share the message or it's out there. You know, you see, I mean, not to be critical of anybody, but you see Rhonda Byrne with The Secret, and I'm sure she's doing whatever's best for her. But since The Secret came out, I know she just put out The Power, but it's kind of like, hey, what else? You know, like, give us more. She had such a big dream and vision. Give us more stuff, you know, and we want it from her. We want more big dreams and visions, and I think the world wants that from all of us. So,
I think a side benefit from what you've done, too, that you may not have realized and others may not, and that is the other modalities that you've been exposed to as a result. I know you have that natural curiosity, and so you've sought out others like David Wolf and the guys with the mind movies and other things that have made you a bigger guy, made you more expansive, wiser, and have helped you, and in turn you've shared that with your audience, and that's helped them. So it really is growing exponentially just beyond the tapping world, even though that's your passion. It's gotten much bigger, right?
Yeah, I mean, I usually share with people sort of what I'm into. You know, we send out some emails with content, we send out some of the emails, you know, promoting other materials, and I think part of the reason people listen to what I have to say and they click and they're happy with what I share is that they know that I've listened to the program I'm recommending, and I have listened to the program that I'm recommending. You know, it's just that's the integrity side of things, that's the authenticity side of things, that if someone says, oh, will you share this with your list, I say, okay, well, let me use it in my life, you know, let me listen to this program, and if I find value from it, then I can share it, and that keeps for a really high quality standard, and people know that I only put out stuff that's really great.
Well, that is terrific. So, Nick, we've got to go here in just about 30 seconds. Can you have the date, exactly the date of the start of the summit?
Yeah, it'll start on October 3rd or 5th. It's the first week of October. It'll start on a Monday. If you register any time in September, you'll get the exact details on when the first call is. And it's the first Monday in October. I don't have the calendar in front of me.
And we're going to be promoting that on our site and every place else. So you can look for the link on our site on the media page where you can find this recording as well. So I want to thank you so much, Nick, for agreeing to do this interview tonight. It's always a blessing and a delight talking with you, and I thank you profoundly for who you are, for coming on the show, and for what you're doing for the world.
Oh, thanks, Lindsay. It was like chatting with a friend. I love these interviews.
Well, thanks. All right, thanks so much. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you on the Tapping World Summit for Pain in a few weeks. All right, bye-bye.